Okay, so we discussed last time the Gemara at the bottom of Chesmer Aleph, which tells us that Nezikin can be collected from Mishubadin, even from sold properties. So if a guy slams into someone else's car and all of his properties that he had at the time of the accident, he later sells to somebody else, and he has no liquid assets from which to pay the claim, so the claim could be collected even from sold properties. We discussed which properties were sold last, and that's the ones you have to collect from, but everyone assumes here in this Gemara, that's the latent assumption, is that Nezikin could be collected from Mishubadim, even from sold properties. And that's what Tosfos asked at the bottom of Chesmon Aleph. Why is that the case? We generally have a rule that a milvah alpeh, and that's something which is not written in a shtar, in a document, can only collect from Bnei Chorin. That might be Doraisa, according to the one who holds Shibuda Lav Doraisa. That might only be Midrabanan, according to the opinion that holds Shibuda Doraisa. But either way, we all agree that a milvah alpeh, a loan that is not written in a shtar, can only collect from liquid assets, cannot collect from mishubadim, from assets that were sold. So that's what Tosfos says at the bottom of Chesed Med Aleph in Taimar, v'han nezikin milvah alpeh ninhu, u'milvah alpeh lo gabi mishabdi. You cannot collect a oral obligation from sold properties. So one possibility is once a verdict is issued, that's like a milvah b'shtar, now you can collect from sold properties. Once the Torah is the one who imposes this lien, not that I accept it upon myself, so since the Zikin is imposed by the Torah, that's automatically considered to be a milvah b'shtar and could collect even from sold properties, even though it doesn't appear in a document. Milvah k'suva b'Torah is k'suva b'shtar damya. That's Tosfos' suggestion over here. This would imply that when something is imposed by the Torah, so it automatically goes to the most stringent possibility that we have before us. For example, that we had yesterday, the Gemara in Kiddushin, which had a machlokas, is Shibuda Doraisa or Shibuda Derabanan? Whenever you have a regular loan, does that collect from sold properties or only liquid assets? And we said we all agree in the end that an oral loan collects from liquid assets, not sold properties, milvah b'shtar, even from sold properties, even from a shubadim. The question is, which is the rule and which is the exception to the rule, meaning one of them is a din d'rabbanan, one of them is a din d'oraisa. Is it the din d'oraisa, you always collect from sold properties, bein b'milvah b'shtar, bein b'milvah alpeh? Or is the rule, you don't never collect from sold properties, bein b'milvah b'shtar, bein b'milvah alpeh? Just the other one is a tekana d'rabbanan. However, the Gemara there suggested, even if you hold milvah shibuda lav d'oraisa, Midoraisa, neither milvah b'shtar nor milvah b'al peh should collect from sold properties. If it's imposed by the Torah, if it's a milvah k'suva b'Torah, so then shibuda doraisa, of course we would collect even from sold properties. When something is imposed by the Torah, it automatically takes on the form of the most stringent option that we have before us. So that's why perhaps a milvah k'suva b'Torah, Tosfos felt, has the status as kiksuba b'shtar damya, and she collect even from sold properties. Rav Shechter once connected this with the Gemara later on Daf Nun Zayin Mabez. Kind of return to the Gemara Daf Nun Zayin Mabez. If you ever learned Eilu Metzias, you'll be familiar with this halacha, where the Gemara tells us on Nun Zayin Mabez. Nun Vav Mabez. I apologize. Nun Vav Mabez. Towards the bottom, the Gemara says, Itmar. When a person picks up an Aveda, part of the Tircha of doing Hashavas Aveda is you have to watch over the item until you return it. You have the statuses of a Shomer, and the Gemara discusses about Metzia, what kind of care you have to provide for the item that you pick up. So the Gemara says, Shomer Aveda, the person who's watching over someone else's lost item. Rabba Amar Keshomer Chinam. Rabba says he has the status of a Shomer Chinam. Rav Yosef Amar Keshomer Sachar has the status of a paid watchman. Rabbi said, what's the difference between a paid watchman and a shayim achinam? Anybody know? Huh? Shayim achinam is chayiv for pshia. He's not chayiv for gneiv v'aveda. Shayim asachar is even chayiv for gneiv v'aveda. Okay. Shayim achinam is only chayiv for pshia. So what is the status of a person who picks up an aveda? Rav Yosef says the shayim asachar. According to Rabbi, he's the status of shayim achinam. We understand. He's not getting paid. But according to Rav Yehuda, he's getting a mitzvah. But mitzvah is lav lehanas nitnu. That's not considered to be a reward. That's not considered to be payment. So why would Rav Yosef hold he has the status of a shomer sacha? Where's the payment? So Rabbi Amar Kishem Echinim Dami Mai Hanoah Kamati Leif. What Hanoah does he get other than fulfilling the Ratzon Hashem, the greatest Hanoah of all? But that's not going to count in this context. Rav Yosef Amar Kishem Sacha Dami. He's the status of a paid watchman. Why? So one possibility is because while you're taking care of it, you're parted from giving staka. So ha'oisik b'mitzvah, partim in ha'mitzvah. You're involved in one mitzvah, you're partim from a second mitzvah. So you gain money. You literally profit. You don't have to give money to the poor person who encounters you while you're taking care of the lost item. So you're partim from giving staka. That itself is the reward. So you became a paid watchman. Ikad mefarshi. However, there's another opinion. Ikad mefarshi hachi. Rav Yosef Ami Kishem Mesach Adami. Kevin de Rachmana Shabde Balkarche Hilka Kishem Mesach Adami. Since the Torah is what imposes this obligation to watch over the lost item and take care of it for your friend, the Torah always imposes things at the highest level of responsibility that's presented before us. So just like a milva ksuva b'Torah, Taisa said, it's ksuva b'shtar damya. And a milva bishtar collects from sold properties, a milva alpen, or a loan, only from liquid assets. But a milva bishtar collects from sold properties. How should we view a milva ksuv b'tayra? The Torah imposed an obligation of a zikim. When you cause damage, you have to pay. So Taisa says, that's ksuv bishtar damya. We automatically assume the most stringent approach. Why should we automatically assume that it's a milva bishtar, not a milva alpen? There is no document here, just because the Torah imposed it. So Shekla suggested, because whenever the Torah imposes obligations, we should assume that it imposes it with the greatest level of responsibility that we could imagine, at least for this scenario. So therefore, since we're not going to treat you as a shoyel, who's chayiv even for accidents, so we're going to assume that he's like a shomer sacha, like a paid watchman, because that's the most stringent or most highest level of responsibility we have before us, and a person has to take care of a lost item as the status of a shomer sacha. So to over here, when the Torah imposes an obligation of the zikin, we're going to assume it as the status as a milva b'shtar, and that's why it collects from sold properties. That's Tysus' answer. However, have a look at the Nemuke Yosef. It says the Nemuke Yosef on the sheet, Oysal. In Taimar, he asked Tysus' question. He says, Vahan Nezikin milval pehi. Nezikin is a milval peh. It's not written in the shtar. It's an oral obligation. I mean, yes, it's based on a pasuk in the Torah, but we never formalized it in the document. V'logabim mishabdi, how can it collect from sold properties? We're tumbling in our Gemara. Which property does he get to collect from? Which one is sold first? Which was sold second? Which was sold third? Last one that was sold is the first one he collects from. How can we collect from sold properties? This is never formalized in the shtar. Says in Mukhe Yosef, Yesh Loimar, the mishkachas lo b'dikos of leimazik shtar b'nizke. Not that there was a verdict in Beis Din, and not because milva ksuva b'tayros ksuva b'shtar d'amya. We're talking about such a scenario, but they haven't done formalized the obligation in a star. The guy wrote it on a napkin. I owe you because of this accident that occurred. That's it. He wrote an IOU. Easy answer. What's your question? It's a milva b'alpeh. Says in Mukhayasim, no, it's a milva b'shtar. They wrote it in a star. Seems like an obvious answer. Why didn't Tyson say that? So maybe you'll say, because that's, you know, we're introducing information we don't have in the Gemara. It's what's known as an okimtub shot. We have to say that it's talking about a certain scenario where you happen to wrote it down. That's we're already limiting ourselves. So it's not that satisfying of an answer, perhaps.
So it's not a chiddush.
Yeah, or we don't have to look for chidushim where, you know, we don't presume to find them. The Gemara here doesn't make a big deal about this. The Gemara just assumes Nezik and Kulex from Mishubadim. So we would assume that this applies to all the Zikin cases, then Mukhe Yosef is limiting us. But why didn't Tosfos say this? I mean, it's an obvious answer, and conceptually, less mechudosh. It's an easier answer to say, because we don't have to introduce new principles. Just say, we're talking about a situation where they formalize it in the Shtar. So Soloveitchik and his Shiurim on Maseches Bava Kamma suggested that Tosfos did not offer this approach of the Mukhe Yosef, because he disagrees that this would not help. Even if you formalize the obligation in a shtar, it still has the status as a milval pen. Meaning, even if you write down, a guy gets into an accident, and I write down, even if it's notarized, we take it to the UPS store, we get it notarized, and there's Adim, and everybody, you know, doesn't matter, that's not considered to be a milva bishtar. It's still a milval pen, and would not collect from sold properties, were not for, you know, the fact that milvak suv b'tayr kisuv b'shadam. This alone will not answer the question. Again, Tosfos's question is, Nezikin is an oral obligation, not a written obligation. Written obligations are the only ones that collect from sold properties. How can Nezikin collect from sold properties? If the person who caused the damage doesn't own it anymore, he sold it to somebody else, how can he collect from him? So then, yes, we're talking about a case where they formalize in a document. Tosfos says, no, that wouldn't help. Why wouldn't that help? So Salvatric suggests that perhaps Tosfos feels it wouldn't help because the only time a document is considered to be a valid shtar is when it's written by a person who's obligating himself to pay something. Why are we forced to say that? Because the Gemara says in Masechta is getting the following rule, and this is really a question on how all shtaros, how all documents work in halacha. Because the Gemara says in Masechta is getting over here, I now from it Aleph, Shiny Eidos to Rachmana Amar mi Pihem velo mi Piksavim. Let's say a guy will submit what we call in American law an affidavit to a Beis Din. So unless they're going to use some sort of extra halachic justification for introducing this as evidence, al pi halacha, strictly speaking, Eidos is not valid in an affidavit, in a written document. Because mi pihem v'lo mi piksavam. The Edom have to offer the testimony orally, because the Pasuk says in Parashat Shoftim, again later on, twice, al pi shnayim Edom yumas hames, or al pi shnei Edom yakum davar. It has to be al pi shnei Edom, based on the word of two Edom, not from their document, not from an affidavit. It has to be oral. So if that's the case, all the Rishonim ask, how do we have Ever Shtar? How do you have a ksuba? How do you have, any kind of document where two witnesses sign to the truthfulness of the document that so-and-so obligated himself in paying a certain amount of money, husband obligates himself to pay the obligations of the ksuba if the marriage will dissolve, if they'll break it off. How could that be valid? Mi pi avalomi pi ksavim. We can't believe anything that the Edom signed to. An affidavit is not valid. It has to be only oral testimony, yeah?
I was just going to say, probably because it's not like you're doing something wrong. Like when you sign a document, like an agreement.
What are the Edom doing wrong by signing an affidavit?
Well, it's not the Edom. I mean, like if we're saying it's on the person that he wouldn't be allowed, like wouldn't be able to go through if he signed it. It's not like he's legally doing something wrong, which is in this.
No one's doing anything legally wrong when a man gets married and then the two witnesses sign a ksuba. What is the ksuba all about? As at the chassan's tish, the chassan picks up a pen and a handkerchief or something. In the olden days, they used to use a yarmulke. Now we don't want to look, the Masada Kedusha doesn't look like he's not Jewish, at the wedding, so we don't take off the yarmulke. We usually use a pen. He picks up a gartel. Some of us are running in different circles. But yeah, gartel or a pen, azoi. So you pick it up, and in lieu of picking that up, you obligate yourself in all of the obligations of the ksuba. The witnesses sign the document that they saw you pick up the sudar, which in lieu of picking that up is symbolic. You obligate yourself to all the obligations of the ksuba. Therefore, the witnesses have to witness you picking it up, and they have to know that you understand what you're doing by the by picking up the sudar. But how is that any different than an affidavit that's submitted to court? That's no good.
Because in one case you're indicting yourself, the other case you aren't. You can say maybe it's the other one's.
So that's what the Baal HaMor says in Masechta Yevamos. All the Rishonim really echo the same idea. And that is, when the witnesses sign a statement of their own accord as to something they witnessed, that's not valid in court. That's an affidavit. Affidavits are not valid halachically. It has to be oral testimony. But if I, as the obligating party, agree to issue a document that I'm obligating myself, in certain obligations, and I ask witnesses to sign to that effect, that is what the Torah introduces as a shtar. You're right, it's an exception to the general rule, but when I obligate myself in something and witnesses sign to that effect, then it has validity. And that could be introduced as evidence in court. So it says the Baal HaMor, the Perek HaNachon Kaf, mi piksavam hu shepsule edusam. It's only if they write their testimony down, avam mi piksavo. Not me pik savam. They, as a third party, decide to introduce evidence as an affidavit. I ask them to do it as the party who's obligating myself in something. Every time you have a loan document or a ksuba says something similar, where I, the chatzin, am obligating myself to pay a certain amount of money under certain circumstances, I ask the eidim to sign. So that's how it works. Okay. What's known by the Rishonim as midas hamiskayev. It was commanded by the person who's obligating himself to pay. That's different than an affidavit that's introduced by a third party. That's how shtar works, yeah?
They're saying that third party wasn't convinced by anyone else, like they decided on their own to do it?
Correct. Instead, let's say we want to offer testimony in a certain monetary dispute, and someone asks us to offer testimony. We don't want to fly in from our vacation, wherever we are. So we say, we'll send you an affidavit. That's no good. You have to come and testify orally or you're disqualified.
Was asked by one of the parties.
But if I ask you to sign a document, a loan document, well, I'm obligating myself to pay money, so then that is an exception to this general rule that written testimony is not valid. This is considered to be a shtar. A shtar is valid.
So it's both the factors of being one of the parties demanding the third party?
No, it has to be the party who's obligating himself.
He's obligating. Okay.
Yeah, so it has to be the borrower. Right. Or the chassan, who's obligating himself to pay the ksuba. Then it has the status of a shtar, and that works midorai. So perhaps somewhat of an exception to the rule, but that's the distinction, is that it's issued by the party who's obligating himself. The Rambam has a unique position here. He takes this even further. The Rambam writes over here, Perikim of Hilchos Eidos Halacha Daled, Din Torah, Shei Mekablam Eidos, Lo B'dinei Mamadis, Lo B'dinei Nefashos, El Mipi HaEidim. All testimony has to be submitted orally. From their oral testimony, not their written word. The Rambam says all monetary documents are only derabanan. Why do they allow written documents which collect even from sold properties? Otherwise, no one will ever lend money. But midday raisa, every shtar is no good. A ksuba is no good. Loan documents, IOUs, none of these are valid according to the Rambam. They're all included in the restriction of mipiyam velo mipiksavam. Okay. He doesn't accept the Baal HaMor's distinction. No, all shtaris are only derabanan. Ask the Ramban, you can't say that. What shtar do we have, Rabbi, say that we all agree is deraisa? There's one shtar.
Ksuba?
Not ksuba. Ksuba doesn't appear in the Torah, huh?
Get
the cost of lasei for krisus, but also the other posing of parashas kiseitse, or at least star kiddushin. Also, that's derived from get. Okay, but get, you can't deny get. So what is the Ram going to say? And get has edim that right on the bottom that she uses as proof later on that she's divorced. How could the Rambam say all testimony has to be oral, even shtaros are no good because that's no different than an affidavit? But how is it get good? That's the kasha the Ramban asks. So the Reb Chaim over here quotes the Ramban to say for a mitzvah shorish beis hiksha alav. Mehen shiny did, mehen shanu donim begitim, beide chasim abovan. The witnesses sign the get, and she uses that as proof later on that she's divorced. How will the Rambam deal with that? So Reb Chaim explains the following. He says that according to the Rambam, there's a difference between what's known as a shtar raya, this is terminology of the Rishonim, but there's a difference between a shtar raya and a shtar kinyan. A shtar raya is a document that's used as proof but doesn't effectuate anything. When the husband picks up the sudar at the chassan's tish, just in case you always wondered what's going on, that's what's going on. So he's picking up the sudar, the pen, garto, and in lieu of that, obligating himself in the obligations of the ksuba, it's all over at that point. We don't need the written document. In fact, if the written document will be found out to be puzzle, because for whatever reason, if the eidim would come to court and testify, we saw him pick up the pen, that would be valid. We demand a written document in order that the wife should have proof later on, but that's not what accomplishes anything. All that is proof later on that the husband picked up the pen. What obligates himself to pay? Picking up the pen, not the shtar. The shtar is just her proof. That's a shtar raya. A shtar kinyan is when the shtar itself affects change. Shtar kinyan is a get. A get can be a shtar kinyan. Or you can have shtar kiddushin is a shtar kinyan. By handing over the shtar, you have effectuated a change. You could also have a sale, document of sale, whereby passing over the shtar, that effectuates the sale. It's one of the kinyanim we do at Mechiras Chametz. We hand over a shtar to the goy, beside from the fact that we do a kinyan kesef and a kinyan, all the other kinyanim we do, one of them is shtar. But you could have a shtar affecting the change, or a shtar could reflect an obligation that was accomplished in some other manner, like by picking up a pen or a garto or something. So ksuba, that's a shtaraya. A loan document is a shtaraya. What obligates you to pay back the loan? The fact that you borrowed money, not the loan documents. So that you're automatically obligated to pay. That's a shtaraya. Yeah.
So what's the point of
shtaraya? Really? Shtaraya is to prove it later on. I'll borrow money from the bank, $1 million for a deal. I'll leave 2 days later and say, no, I don't know you guys anything, never met you before, shalom aleichem. And they say, what you were just in here yesterday, you borrowed $1 million, and they have no way of proving it. So we allow them to write a shtaraya. Says the Ram, that's the Rabbanon, kidei shgo tinol delos b'fnei lovin. That's it. Otherwise, no one's going to lend money. But the Rambam feels that's only the Rabbanon. All the other Rishonim said that's Daraisa. Since as I was sitting in the bank in the loan office, commanded the Edom to write such a shtar, midas hamiskayev, that's a shtar midaraisa. That's not the same as an affidavit with which they decided to write on their own. If I command them to do it, it's a din daraisa Rambam holds. No, that's also a din Rabbanon. What's the only shtar that's a shtar daraisa? When the shtar affects change. Meaning not only did I command them to write it and I am the party who's obligating myself, but the document itself is what obligated me. That's Daraisa, says the Rambam. Shtar Kinyan. That's even more than Dasa Mechayev, says Reb Chaim. That's the shtar itself is what's Mechayev me. Okay, that's Daraisa. But when the shtar just affects, reflects some sort of obligation that I accomplished some other way, even if I'm the party who obligated myself and I commanded them to do it, the shtar is only the Rabbanan, says the Rambam. The Rambam takes this das and mischayev so far, not only that the obligating party asked the Edom to sign, but the signatures and the document is itself what effectuated the change. Shtar kinyan, that's the raya. Shtar raya is only the Rambam. Fine, but getting back. Over here, Rabbeisai, is this shtar that the Edom signed, that this fellow, got involved in an accident, and he has to pay. Even if I, as the damaging party, ask the Edom to sign, would any of the Rishonim consider this shtar as a valid shtar, or would this be an affidavit? So in order to be a valid shtar, even for the Ramban, even for the Baal HaMor, it has to be written midas hamiskayev, based on the instructions of the person who's obligating himself. Even though the shtar is not what's accomplishing the change, that was the Rambam's fancy position. The other Rishonim held, if I, as the obligating party, ask the Edom to sign, that's a shtar. But what is that? Am I obligating myself to pay? No. Who obligates me to pay over here? Who obligates me to pay is the Torah. Because it's a milvah, ksuva b'Torah. The Torah said you have to pay. So if Salvatrix suggested, perhaps Tosis did not say the answer of the Mukah Yosef, that we're talking about where we formalize the obligation of a zikin and a shtar, and that's why it collects from sold properties, because it's a milvah b'shtar now, and a milvah b'shtar collects from mishubadim. Salvatrix suggests that Tosis never presented that answer. Because this shtar is never written midas hamiskayev. You are never obligating yourself in a zikin. I'm not asking the witnesses to sign that I obligated myself to pay, because you didn't obligate yourself to pay by crashing into this guy's car. The Torah imposes the obligation. It's a milvah ksuva b'Torah. So it's never midas hamischayev. I never obligated myself to pay. The Torah obligated me to pay. Oh, so that does not have the status of a shtar at all. Perhaps that's what Tosis is holding. That's why Tosis never brought up this possibility of the Nemukah Yosef. Chaver, you hear the one? So maybe that's why it doesn't have the status of a shtar. Okay, let's go on. Let's turn to the two dots. Chesim of Beis, where it continues on. Really just more of the same. But we'll see there's one important discussion at the bottom of the Yom. So the Gemara continues. What was the rule we established until now? That the first property that's sold, that's the property, the last property that's sold is the first property you collect from, generally speaking. But if the last property that was sold is Idis, so then the Lokeach can push you to lesser properties, because he could say, the only reason you collect from the last property that was sold is in order to protect me. Here it doesn't protect me, it does harm to me. If you remember the discussion that we had yesterday, he could say, E-F-shi b'takanas chachamim, this doesn't help me here. The only reason you collect from the last property that's sold is to protect the lukuchos, to protect the people who bought first. But here he's saying, Here he's saying, this doesn't help me here. I'd rather you collect from the first properties that I bought, which are the worst properties. Okay. So Gemara continues on. Pshita. Machaloi keach. Beinonis v'ziboris. Let's say you have all three properties were sold. This guy owned all three properties. He owned Idis, he owned Beinonis, he owned Ziboris. And he sold them all, and now he has no liquid assets, so you're going to be Terev from Mishubadim. You're going to take properties that were sold already to collect the debt, which predated all these sales. So Pshita, Machal, let's say the Lokeach himself, though, sells the properties. He sold the Beinonis and the Ziboris, all he's left with is Idis. So even though if he had bought the Idis last, and he still has the Beinonis and Ziboris, he could push them to the other properties, because he could say, this Takana that you only collect from the last property sold doesn't help me here. That's only if he retained ownership of them. But if he sells it to another party, he sells it to a third party. Vishir Idis Lafan of Lesukul Veligma Meidis. There, everyone collects from Idis. Dachroinehi, it was the last one he bought. Ubenis Viziboris, Lesneu Gabe, he doesn't have the Benis and the Ziboris anymore to push them to those properties. The Masi Lamemaluhu Gabe mi Benis Viziboris, the Lonechali, Bitakana de Rabbanan, and this here, it's not helpful to me. Did you collect from the last property that was sold? I'd rather you collect from the first property that sold here. You can't say that because you don't have those properties anymore. Aval Machar Idis, let's say the following case. He sells the Idis. Vishir Beinonis Viziboris, my. So what happened? The last property he bought was the Idis, and he sold it. All he has is the Beinonis and Ziboris. So which was the last property that was sold? Was the Idis. Who is the guy, who owes who's the creditor? Who's he going to collect from? Which was the last property that was sold? The Idis, but it's changed hands now. Again, it was, used to belong to Reuven, was sold to Shimon, Shimon sold it to Levi. So the guy's going to go and collect from Levi. So my, Savar, Abai, Lameima, Asuku, and that Gabi, me Idis, everyone should go to Levi and collect the Idis. Amalei Rava, Ma, Macha, Rishon, Lesheni, calls the Chush, Atav, Liyodoi. When the first one sells it to the second party, he sells him all of the rights and privileges that he had if he had retained the property. Became in the Ilu, Asu, Gabi, Lokeach, Rishon, if he would have maintained the Idis, together with his Beinus and Ziboris, he could have pushed him to the Beinus and Ziboris. So too, this Lokeach Sheni Levi can push them back to Shimon to his Beinus and Ziboris. If he came into the U.S. with Gabal Lokeach Rishon, Matsi Agvu, Luhumi Beinus and Ziboris, he could push them back to the Beinus and Ziboris here too. V'yafal pi dechi zavni Beinus and Ziboris, even if he would have sold the Beinus and Ziboris and retained the Idis, they all would have collected from Idis, Ikasi Idis, B'nei Chorin Havoi, V'enifram, Inechaz Meshubadim, Kozman, Ikim B'nei Chorin, Matsi Amalehoi, Lenechali behai takana lokeach sheni nami matzi amalei gabi beinus v'ziboris. The lokeach sheni has all those rights and privileges. The chizavin lokeach sheni adai to the kol zechusa the havalei l'rishon v'gavo zavin. So he bought it having in mind all the rights and privileges that the first one would have had. So if Shimon, let's say the last property he bought was Idis, could still push him back to the beinus and ziboris to the earlier properties. So too, when he sells the Idis to Levi, Levi can push them back to Shimon's Beinonis and Ziboris. He bought all the rights and privileges that Shimon had. All right, that's the Gemara. It's a little complicated. Amar Rava, Rava says another permutation of this discussion. Reuven Shemacher, nothing new in principle, just different permutations. Amar Rava, Reuven Shemacher calls Sadois of the Shimon. Reuven here sells all of his properties that we showed him add at once to Shimon. So they were all sold the same time. So, each party collects what they're supposed to collect. There is no property that was bought last. But then, Reuven Shemach calls the dust of the Shimon, V'halach Shimon u'machas sada achas l'levi. Shimon sells one property to Levi. U'ba balchov de Reuven, the balchov of Reuven comes, ratza mizeh goyve, we say the lokeach sheni is the same, it's just an extension of lokeach rishon. Since lokeach rishon bought all of the properties at once, and therefore whoever comes to collect, can collect from whoever he wants, so to lokeach sheni, has the status of like an extension of Lokeach Rishon, and whoever comes to collect could collect from wherever they want. Ratzim Yizeh Goyver, Ratzim Yizeh Goyver. However, this is only true of Elamar and Elda Zavin Beinonis. He bought Beinonis, and the guy is collecting Beinonis. Aval Zavin Idis, let's say the Lokeach Sheni bought Idis Viziboris Lo. Then he cannot collect from wherever he wants. Darmalela, Achidaiki Vizavni Idis Viziboris. There, the Lokeach Sheni could say, I bought Idis and Ziboris. In order, you shouldn't bother me. I knew you were an outstanding debt. I don't want to have to pay you. V'afilu zavim beinonis nami. Even if he bought beinonis, lo amaran el dulo shir beinonis de kavase. He didn't leave beinonis by Shimon. If he did, he could say, push him back to Shimon. Dulo matzi yamalei hinachli l'chamokum l'gavi Shimon. He could say, come, go back to Shimon. Aval shir beinonis de kavase gavi Shimon lo gavi minei de matzi yamalei hinachli l'chamokum l'gavis minei. So the basic principle the Gemara says over here is that the lokeach sheni is an extension of lokeach rishon. So therefore, he has all the rights and privileges of lokeach rishon. And if they were all sold at once, you could collect from him if he has, you know, properties that are fitting for, you know, to be collected from. But if he if there are similar properties in the hands of Lokeach Rishon, so then you can push him back. You can push the Lokeach Sheni can push you back to the Lokeach Rishon. All right. Then now the Gemara transitions to somewhat of a related discussion. Amar Abaye, Reuven Shemachar Sada L'Shimon Ba'Achrayas. What is Achrayas? Achrayas means a guarantee, which means if you come and collect from properties that I bought from you, not that you collect, but your creditors come and collect it, I can come to you to recoup my losses. Now, you would think any sane person would borrow property, it would buy properties only with achrayas, meaning with the service policy, that if I ever get collected from, you better pay me back. But you never know, you know, high-risk loans, high-risk, high-reward. You might buy it sometimes without achrayas at a cheap price and taking the risk that if I ever get collected from, it'll be on me. Generally, most sales were with achrayas. That's why the Gemara has a rule, achrayas to soferu. If we find a document that there's no achrayas, we would assume that it was a mistake of the sofer and there should have been achrayas. It's only if it states explicitly there's no achrayas, no responsibility on behalf of the seller, that if the buyer ever gets collected from for the seller's debts, that it'll recoup the losses. We would generally assume the buyer would get recouped, but if it's not written in the document, but if they agreed otherwise, I'm fine. So Amar Baye, Reuven Shemachar Sada L'Shimon. Reuven sells a field to Shimon. Ba'achrayas. Meaning if Shimon gets collected from, he's going to go back to Reuven. Va'asa Ba'achov de Reuven. V'tarf Mishimon. Guess what? It happened. So Dinahu, da also Reuven umishtai Dina Bade. Reuven can defend himself in court. Meaning, the Balchov cannot say, Reuven, you get out of here. You have no liquid assets. So you're irrelevant to this discussion. Now it's between me and Shimon, the buyer. Because we're the only people here who are engaged in this discussion. If you had liquid assets, you would have to pay. You don't have anything, so get out. He can't say that. Why? Because Shimon is going to come back to Reuven to get recouped for his losses. So Reuven is still a party to what's going on. So Reuven, the Balchov cannot come and say, Reuven, get out of town, get out of court, because get your lawyer out of here, because you're no longer a party to this discussion. If you take it from him, he's going to come back to me. The Ika de Amri, there are those that say, Afilu Shaloi Ba'achrayas Nami, even if it's without Achrayas. Meaning, he doesn't have to recoup the losses. Reuven is still a party to what's going on. He can still stay in court and make arguments. Da Amalei Lo Nechali De Tehavi L'Shimon Tarumas Alai. I don't want to ruin this relationship, this business relationship with Shimon. You see, business relationships are critical. Because I don't want to ruin this relationship. So Reuven can still make an argument in court. So what happens over here, Chevra? Reuven borrowed money. He had properties at the time. He sold them to Shimon. The Balchov comes to collect from Reuven. Reuven says, I don't have anything. Go to Shimon. He goes to Shimon to collect, and Reuven starts arguing with him in court. He says, Reuven, who are you? Get out of here. You don't have any money to pay. Reuven can say, no, I'm entitled to make an argument, either because I don't want Shimon to hate me, or because Shimon, if he gets you collect from him, he's going to come back to me for the money. That's all the Gemara said. Taisus over here, though, asks a very important question. Look over here, Taisus de Maskal Dina. Taisus asks, Vim Taimar, my naftamina. Who cares that Reuven is there in court? What already is Reuven going to say that Shimon couldn't say? And even more than that, makes you say, no, Reuven is smarter. He's going to advance a better claim. So Taisus says, no, that doesn't make any sense either. Hakol mashiyacho Reuven liton taninolei. Whatever Reuven can say, we will say on behalf of Shimon, not a public defender, but we'll say it on his behalf. The judge will intervene and say, you know, argue on behalf of Shimon and say arguments, even if Shimon didn't himself present them, even though he didn't present these claims. We're going to demand certain levels of proof, even if the party didn't make a claim to demand them. Bein parua, bein mezuyav. Let's say a guy comes to the shtar that says you owe him money. The judge will intervene and say maybe it was paid, even though the defendant didn't say that. The judge will say, how do I know it's not paid? The judge will say, how do I know it's not a forgery? And you're going to have to prove it. That's called taninon. We're going to offer that argument on his behalf. D'ilav halchi, if that's not the case, lo shavak techaim l'cho birya. We can't proceed in any legal matter if we're not going to make these claims and demand certain levels of proof. Even in the absence of an argument from the defendant. Why? Because let's say what will happen. You'll have a guy comes and he presents to Yarshim, he presents to inheritors, your father, you know, a document that was signed by your father with two witnesses that he owes me, you know, an enormous sum of money. So the Yosayimim can't say it's a forgery. How would they know it's a forgery? They don't know. Maybe the father, that was the, maybe the father signed it. How should I know? If it's the party himself, he can make that claim. Let's say the party's not here. He's in a coma. What are the kids going to say? So they can't say anything. So the judge will step in and the judge will say, Mizuyov, it's a forgery. Prove that it's not a forgery. We must step in and make these claims. Otherwise, people are going to take other people's money without any kind of, you know, without any kind of proof. Over Perikah, Pasha Nami Mukhakein, Dekamer Shchiv Meira, person is on his deathbed. Shama mana leploni biyadi. He says, I owe a mana to ploni. Amar tnu. If he says, go and give it to him. Nosnin lo. We give it to him. Lo amar tnu. If he doesn't say, give it to him. Ain nosnin lo. We don't give it to him. Even though he said he owes him money, we don't give it to him. Umuki go b'denakat shtara. We're talking about with the other party as a star. So if he says, amar tnu. He says, give it to him. Kai me l'shtari. I just validated his star. Lo amar tnu, lo kaime l'shtare, you have not validated the shtar, and will demand proof that this is a valid shtar. Mashma de tanina lehuli yisayim mizuyof. We will argue on behalf of the children, mizuyof, even though they can't make that claim themselves. How would they know if it's forged? Okay, so the question over here is, the Gemara said, Reuven borrowed money. He had properties. He sold them to Shimon. The Baal Chov is going to come and collect now from Shimon. Reuven is there arguing with him in court. He says, Reuven, get out of here. What are you doing here anymore? Reuven says, no, I'm entitled to be here. Because if you collect from Shimon, Shimon's going to come back to me. Either he's going to hate me or he's going to have a financial claim against me. Bachrayas or Shalom Bachrayas. What difference does it make that Reuven's here? What is he going to say already that Shimon can't say? Oh, we won't say on behalf of Shimon. So Taisa says the following. Don't tell me there's an afkamina that Reuven is still considered to be a baldavar with regards to psulei edus. Okay, I have to leave a little early. So, Rabbi, see the end of this Taisvis and see the rest of the Marmar comes. Taisvis here says something shocking that both Reuven and Shimon, their relatives, would be psulei edus. The question we really have to ask is who's the real litigant here? How could both the krovim of Reuven and Shimon be psulei edus? Who here is the litigant? Either Reuven or Shimon, how could they both be psulei? We have to understand that. All right, Mr. Chairman, we'll pick up tomorrow. Sorry about this.